Hello, everyone. I'm really glad to see you. Very, very glad that you're here, and I'm glad to be with you. So to begin, I want you to ask a question of yourself. And however you choose to answer is fine. This is not a right, wrong question answer. Here it is. How hungry am I for friendship? Now, some of us would answer, I won't lie. I have a big desire for more and closer friends. And others of us would say, I'm good. I don't need more friends. My friendship cup is full. And however you might answer that question, there are many people who are very hungry for friendship. Ground Floor is a new company that began with several locations in San Francisco and later opened a site in Los Angeles. Ground Floor is a social club with an emphasis on friendship. And one of the company's co-founders said it offers spaces for work, meeting rooms and phone booths, spaces for wellness like classes and a gym, and spaces for socializing. There are karaoke nights, special interest groups, craft workshops. It sounds like an after-school club for kids, but it's designed for adults who are 30 and older. The owner explained that there is a difficult social transition for many people in their late 20s and early 30s, especially those who move to large cities for work. That's the time in life when many move away from families, away from hometowns and universities, where building community came more naturally, and they leave for places where they often only know the people with whom they work. And because they are starting from scratch when it comes to friendship, these years can feel like a kind of social purgatory, is how the owner put it. When Ground Floor's Los Angeles location opened, there were 2,000 people on the wait list, all of them ready to pay $200 a month to participate. The overwhelming response of Ground Floor proves that many of us are living with a friendship deficit. Some of us are satisfied on the friend front, but many of us know there is a better brand of friendship than what we are experiencing. Well, I have some good news. I know a guy. I know a guy who understands why friendship matters. I know a guy who knows how to do friendship in better and healthier ways. In fact, he can teach us how to take all of our relationships to the next level. Now, I want to be transparent. When our team first asked me to focus this teaching series on relationships, I was not totally enthusiastic. And to be honest, I thought there might be some more compelling, relevant topics, some more interesting topics that I could tie to the life of Jesus. But the more I considered their input, the more I saw the genius of what they asked me to do. Whether you have realized it or not, few things will upgrade your life more than enhancing the quality of your relationships. We often think that it is our circumstances that dictate the level of happiness that we experience. But it is not circumstances that primarily determine how happy we are. Relationships are what truly determine our happiness. People with good relationships and bad circumstances are happier than people with good circumstances and bad relationships. And if you've been in both of those scenarios, and most of us have been, you know that's true if you are thoughtful. If you are assigned some difficult project at work, but you have the opportunity to tackle that project with a fun, hardworking team, then you will be happier at work than if your work was mindless, if it was a cinch, but your coworkers are duds. In the same way, if you face financial challenges and if you face parenting challenges with a spouse to whom you are deeply connected, you will be far happier than the couple who has money to burn and who has won the parenting lottery with their kids who are easy to raise, but whose marriage is limping along. Circumstances can bring joy. Circumstances can bring pain. There's no doubt about that. But our greatest joy and our greatest pain always flow out of our relationships. So it only makes sense for us to give our best energy to choosing our relationships wisely and building our relationships intentionally. So I am now excited about this series because I know you will be able to upgrade your life if you will pour yourself into the truths that we discuss during this series. And I hope you will do that. Most of us have heard of John 3:16 because it is probably the most frequently cited, most frequently quoted verse from the Bible. And some of us memorized the King James Version of this verse. For God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son. But here's the way the New Living Translation renders John 3:16. For this is how God loved the world. He gave his one and only son, so that everyone who believes in him will not perish, but have eternal life. Now, almost all of us realize those words were spoken by Jesus, and they were spoken by Jesus about himself. But do you know to whom those words were spoken? Jesus spoke those words to a man named Nicodemus. And you might recall that Nicodemus made a clandestine visit to Jesus one night, and presumably pretty late at night. And why did Nicodemus come at such an uncommon hour? Well, he did it to avoid being seen by his friends, his fellow Pharisees, because they viewed Jesus not as a friend, they viewed Jesus as an enemy. And they would have been suspicious of Nicodemus for showing up for what appeared to be some kind of social gathering with Jesus. But Nicodemus was that rare person who, even though he was part of the powerful group, retained his capacity to think independently. And Nicodemus was captivated by everything that he had observed about Jesus. He could not bring himself to dismiss Jesus simply because his superiors were demanding that he do so. Something about Jesus rang true for Nicodemus. So he threw on a hoodie one night and he risked his position, if not his life, to speak with Jesus face to face. And yet he tried to protect himself by going late at night when hopefully no one would see him. So look at the opening verses of John chapter 3. There was a man named Nicodemus, a Jewish religious leader who was a Pharisee. After dark one evening, he came to speak with Jesus. "Rabbi," he said, "we all know that God has sent you to teach us. Your miraculous signs are evidence that God is with you." Now, there were occasions when one of the Pharisees, one of the enemies of Jesus, would initially flatter him with some words and then would attempt to discredit him in front of an audience. Now, it always backfired, but the Pharisees were slow to admit that they could not get the best of Jesus in a verbal joust. But when Nicodemus called on Jesus, there was no audience. So his compliments, the words he spoke that were affirmations of Jesus, they seem like they are coming from his heart. They are genuine. And the conversation that follows between Jesus and Nicodemus, it's just a fascinating conversation. If you don't remember it, even if you do, you should read it, John chapter 3. I walked us through that conversation a few years ago, but it's not the content of the conversation that interests me most today. It is the decision that Nicodemus made to pursue that conversation. From his peers, Nicodemus was hearing that Jesus was a charlatan, a troublemaker, a liar, a deceiver. But somehow Nicodemus knew that if he showed up at Jesus' door, he would be welcomed. He knew Jesus was approachable. And when it comes to friendship, there is no quality that is more helpful to us in starting and building friendships than approachability. It is not too much to say that Nicodemus and Jesus became friends beginning at this point. I mean, later in John chapter 7, it is clear that Nicodemus is standing up for a friend when the ruling council moves to condemn Jesus, But Nicodemus stands before his peers and he asks a question that is intended to cause them to take a step back. Nicodemus asks, is it legal to convict a man before he is given a hearing? Nicodemus is pointing out, we're breaking the laws that we have established. And at the risk of being branded a traitor, Nicodemus insists that the law be followed where Jesus is concerned. And later, after Jesus was crucified, at great personal risk, Nicodemus dared to ensure that the dead body of Jesus was treated with utmost respect. And he personally provided expensive myrrh and aloes for the embalming of Jesus' body. It was a clear sign that he had a great personal affection for Jesus. You know, in Jesus' day, every prominent rabbi had a literal following, people who would follow that rabbi around and listen to the rabbi teach. Every rabbi had a following of whom he was the undisputed leader and master. And in a functional sense, a rabbi's followers were his slaves. But in John 15, verse 15, I want you to notice what Jesus says to his disciples. I no longer call you slaves because a master doesn't confide in his slaves. Now you are my friends, since I have told you everything the Father told me. You didn't choose me, I chose you. Jesus does more than respond politely to our overtures of friendship. Jesus makes the first move. He chooses to befriend us. And here is the truth that I want us to acknowledge. We follow a Savior who values and who has modeled friendship. And I think some of us have not even realized that part of following Jesus is following his desire for and his pattern for friendship. Jesus considers friendship important enough that of all the things that he could choose to call us, he makes a point of calling us his friends. So here's the question. If friendship is that important to Jesus, why have some of us ignored it? Why have some of us given up on it? You know, every type of relationship faces obstacles. And if you're aware of your own life and relationships, you know friendship is no different. Friendship includes obstacles. Some of us have concluded that the potential benefits of friendship are not worth overcoming the obstacles, not worth the risks that come with attempting friendship. Some of us are disillusioned by some of the false starts that we've had with people who we thought might be our friends. And some of us have been a part of friendship train wrecks. And there is a cynical part of us that is just ready to not need friendship. Some of us have been scarred by disloyal friends or excluded by a group of casual friends or oppressed by some overbearing friend. So we've concluded it's just safer to avoid the friendship zone, which is different from the friend zone. The friendship zone is another thing altogether. And some of us have made our own mistakes as friends. And if we're self-aware, perhaps we're even asking if we are really friendship material. Maybe the problem has been that we're not friendship material. Well, I just want to assure you today that friendship is worth the effort. But there will always be barriers on the path of friendship. And I want to highlight a couple of the most common ones. One of them is fear of vulnerability. Now look, not all friendships are deep friendships. Not all friendships need to be deep friendships. I mean, I'm guessing that most of the men who are hearing me talk about friendship and vulnerability right now do not consider vulnerability a big factor when we seek out friends. You know, we're looking to watch a football game with somebody. We're not going through a checklist of qualities. Yeah, this guy needs to be vulnerable. Often men want to be friends with someone who shares their interests and someone who is, what's that highly spiritual word? Fun. And frankly, some women prefer that type of friendship also. I think we all need that type of friendship. at some point, to some degree. But if you've tried to go deeper in a friendship, but you were wounded by how it went down in some way, it is natural to hesitate before choosing to do it again. Frankly, it is wise to allow friendships to deepen at a gradual pace. And some of us can be very impatient as we enter friendships because we want them to become unnaturally deep in a very quick timeline. A high degree of transparency in a brand new friendship can be awkward. It can seem out of place. If you've ever made the mistake of oversharing in ways that were too much for a new friendship, or if you've noticed that people pull back when you have shared too much, I suggest you learn to budget how quickly you share the most sensitive parts of your story and how much of your story you share. How about sharing the same amount of yourself over a longer period of time? Trying to accelerate a relationship at an unnatural pace will usually result in someone pulling away. You know, several people have sent me this video that's pretty popular on social media right now. It's a video of a young man. It appears that he's giving a testimony at a more traditional church, and he is standing up giving his testimony, and he announces that his future wife is in the room. God has told him that his future wife is sitting in the room at that moment. You see, this guy wanted to bypass all the hard work and all the awkward moments that go with meeting a young woman and establishing a relationship and then testing that relationship to see if it is going to last. He wanted to define the relationship before there was a relationship, even before the woman was identified. And it was a super, super awkward moment, which was really the whole point of the video. He was very sincere, but he was very clueless. And when you and I try to take a friendship too deep, too soon, that is awkward also. And rather than attract people to us, we unintentionally startle people and require them to take a step back, which sometimes means that the friendship will slow down. So here's a wise guideline that I suggest. Don't try to make everyone a close friend, but leave the door open for people who want to willingly walk through it. You need to give other people the room to decide what kind of friendship they want with you. And you need to respect, genuinely respect, that person's right to do it. Don't just lay back because you're trying to find a way to make it work out, manipulate it to what you want it to be. Do it out of respect for the other person and recognizing the other person's autonomy. Proverbs 18:24 says this, "A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." Now, I've always found that verse fascinating because Hebrew culture valued family so much. But Solomon is saying there are some friends that are so special, so important in your life, that it can be even more valuable than family in certain situations. But I want you to notice that the number of friends like that is a small number. He says there is a friend. He doesn't say there are a bunch of friends who stick closer than a brother. He says there is a friend. And we need to remember that. And we need to give people time and room to decide if that's the kind of friendship they might want with us. You can't make a friend like that in a week. You can't make a friend like that in a month. You can't assign that role to someone without respecting the person's right to choose it. There are no shortcuts to some of the awkwardness and uncertainty of building friendships, and we just have to accept that as part of the friendship package. And if you're into control, if you like control, if you like how to determine not only how you do things, but you like to determine how other people do things, this is probably a struggle for you. It takes time to build close friendships, and it is a lot more art than science. But if you desire close friendship, at some point, you are going to have to reveal more of your inner self. That's just part of being friends for a long time and becoming closer friends. That's what it means when people say, he's a close friend, she's a close friend. I was friends with a guy for 7 years before he told me about a key event that shaped his life in a profound way. And I could tell that it felt very risky to him to share that part of his life for me. But we have now been friends for over 30 years, and there is very little we do not know about each other. And even though we are men, we have both slowly, naturally reached a level of vulnerability that makes us friends that are closer than a brother. And that friendship is strong. But I gave him room to decide if he wanted that friendship, and I was making the decision for myself. And sometimes people are not on the same schedule. And all of that has to be worked out in sometimes awkward ways. But we always have to give people freedom to determine what they want out of the relationship. There's another obstacle to friendship, and that's busyness. You know, our world is moving at a frantic pace. Anybody know that? I mean, you're living in that, aren't you? One author wrote that the greatest gift we can give ourselves is what he calls the ruthless elimination of hurry from our lives. And that is a really important phrase. The problem is that some of us are addicted to the rush of being rushed. So sit down and engage in long conversations with people. Ain't nobody got time for that. And we're not saying that out loud, but this is what we're saying to ourselves in our hearts and in our minds. It just sounds so unproductive because there are things to do. There are places to go. We've got to rush to the next thing, the next responsibility. In Luke chapter 10, Jesus was at the home of some close friends, and he was dropping wisdom bombs and truth bombs on this group of people right in the living room. But Jesus' friend, his good friend, Martha, was working in the kitchen, and Martha was irritated that her sister Mary was listening to Jesus and soaking up what Jesus was saying rather than standing next to her in the kitchen and chopping vegetables. And so Martha complained to Jesus. He's like, Jesus will get her straight. But whenever you go to Jesus to tell him to get somebody straight, you know what Jesus usually does? He starts working on you. And he told Martha she needed to slow down and sit down and to emulate Mary. And then Jesus explained, my dear Martha, you are worried and upset over all these details. Boy, that just describes some of us. It just describes the mode that we are in all the time. Worried and upset about all the details. He goes on to say, but there is only one thing worth being concerned about. And Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken away from her. If you aren't sure what Jesus is getting at, let me summarize. Jesus is saying that my faith and my people are more important than my to-do list. Now, some of you don't like to-do lists, so this one is no problem for you. You don't like lists. Some of you live by your lists. And the problem is some of us live for our list. We don't feel like we're living unless we're checking things off the list. And Jesus is reminding people like that, people like Martha, that your God and your people are more important than your list. Let's keep it real. Some of the time that we should be investing in relationships, including friendship, is being stolen daily by our phones and our TVs. When people tell me they don't have time to make it to worship, they don't have time to serve, they don't have time to meet with a group of other people and discuss spiritual things, I always wonder how much time they are making for their devices and their social media and their shows. And I know that a lot of people know the characters in their favorite shows far better than they know the characters in the Bible. My phone recently told me, smart aleck that it is, that I looked at it for an average of 5 to 6 hours a day 1 week. Now, some of that was checking email and answering email and responding to texts. I mean, I can honestly say that I do a lot of my work from my phone, but 6 hours out of the 17 hours that I was awake most of those days, how can that be good? Jesus invited a group of people to follow him. He invited a group of people to live with him for several years because he knew spiritual growth happens best in the context of relationships. Why are we calling you into groups during this series? Because we know what Jesus has taught us and what Jesus modeled for us, that spiritual progress occurs best and most rapidly in the context of relationships. So we're calling all of us together for relationship. So for Jesus, building friendships was a priority. It was one of the core purposes of his life. And yet for many of us, friendship is an afterthought. And that is a way in which we are not aligned with Jesus Christ. If you're my age or older, you remember the Harry Chapin song, Cats in the Cradle, about a father who did not have time for his son when the boy was young, who came to regret it when he saw that his son did not have time for him as an adult. And the haunting line near the end of that song is, he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. So I tell you this as a friend, the greatest enemy of our relationships is our devices. And that enemy is quietly strangling close family ties and marriages and friendships. And our kids are growing up just like us. If you think about it, much of the Bible's instruction is intended to remove barriers so that friendship can be built. Cultural and social barriers limit relationships. So the Bible encourages us to love and accept one another. Why? So that we will build more relationships, be open to more relationships. Unsolved conflict between us short circuits friendship and other relationships. So the Bible teaches us to do what? To forgive quickly and to forgive without arbitrary limits. Why would the Bible encourage us to do that? One reason is to multiply and enhance relationships. Forgive so that the relationships can continue to grow. The more we practice the way of life that Jesus modeled for us, the more we surrender to the life that he taught us to live, the more fertile the field of friendship will become in our lives. If we look and think more like Jesus, then we will attract people for friendship more like Jesus. By the way, one of the most common barriers to friendship is selfishness. We get in our own way. And imitating Jesus is the best way to eradicate selfishness from our lives. In John 12:32, Jesus said, "And when I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw everyone to myself." And then John explains, he said this to indicate how he was going to die. Jesus attracts people to himself by sacrificing himself. And if you want more friendship, if you want more opportunities for more meaningful connections with people, you must make it less about you and more about others. And if you do that, people will increasingly gravitate to you. You know, when something is authentic, when something is valuable, there is almost always a counterfeit form of it. So I want to highlight a few twisted forms of friendship that you and I need to recognize in ourselves and in other people. We can look for these things in the mirror first, but we can also look for these things in other people so that we'll be able to avoid dysfunctional friendships. One is friendship as a means to an end. I'll just put it crudely. Some people will use you. And they are willing to feign friendship to get what they want. And sometimes people are fully aware of the fact that they are using you, and sometimes the person is just so broken and so accustomed to living that way and treating people that way, they don't even realize they're doing it. They could be using you to chase money, or it could be sex or pleasure, or it could be some kind of validation that they need. They might see you as their ticket to a better social life, or they may see you as a doorway to a career that they desire. Proverbs 17, verse 17 says, a friend loves at all times. A friend doesn't just love you when they can get something from you, because the Bible says love is not self-seeking. True friends will not use you. And if you are a true friend, you will guard against being more friendly in order to use people or get something from them. Another thing to avoid is friendship without boundaries. If you're part of a friendship in which someone tries to make decisions for you, or someone tries to control a large portion of your life, or someone attempts to guilt trip you in order to manipulate you to do what he or she wants, or someone encourages you to be emotionally dependent on them or on their approval, you need to make a point of learning about and establishing some healthy relational boundaries. Now, before we leave, I just want us to think about the balance of friendship. And I want us to talk about some qualities of healthy friendships that balance one another. There are different kinds of positive, healthy friendships, but they will always strike a balance in some important ways, and I want to mention a few of those before we close. First, healthy friendship is gracious, but also accountable. Of course you should forgive your friend who makes a mistake, who says something hurtful, who does something that was unfair to you. But if an apology is not sincere, or if you are wronged repeatedly in the same way, and it becomes a frequent pattern in the relationship, forgiveness does not require you to agree to be routinely mistreated. So forgive generously, but also expect accountability. Here's another. Healthy friendship is generous, but the generosity is balanced by reciprocity. Keeping score in any relationship, well, I've done this, I've done this, you've only done that. Keeping score in any relationship is unwise. But when a friendship is lopsided in ways for which there is no valid explanation, it is a warning sign that someone is not reciprocating. Jesus did say, it is more blessed to give than to receive. So we should be looking to give. But when you or your friend is always the taker and never the giver, adjustments need to be made. Here's another. Healthy friendship is devoted, but it is not obsessed. Loyalty to a friend is a great quality, but when loyalty is defined in a way that cuts off a person from other important relationships, then it is becoming dysfunctional. When someone insists that you isolate yourself in order to be a loyal friend to him or her, you're being misled, and someone is attempting to control you, and you need to recognize it. Here's another. Healthy friendship is accepting, but it is not blindly loyal. If you have a friend who requires you to say what is not true, or requires you to keep secrets that should not be kept, do not allow yourself to be manipulated by a friend who is defining friendship as your obligation to assist in those ways. The Apostle Paul wrote, "Love rejoices whenever the truth wins out." Authentic loyalty does not side with someone who is not telling the truth. Here's another. Healthy friendship is personal, but it is also a witness to a lonely world. I think most of us are probably guilty of thinking that friendship is about me and that other person. But friendship is actually about more than that. Everything about our lives should bring glory to God, including our closest friendships. So ask God to glorify Himself through you as you attempt to be the kind of friend He wants you to be, and as you seek to enjoy friendship and to be a faithful friend. Always, always desire and determine that you are going to glorify God first, because that priority is valid even when it comes to friendship. Now, we need to close, but if you've listened to this message today and you've inwardly mourned that your personal track record or maybe your current experience when it comes to friendship is not anywhere near what it should be or what you want it to be, I want to remind you of what we witnessed in the opening segment of this message. Nicodemus went to Jesus at night because he knew Jesus would welcome him, and Jesus wants you to know that he will welcome you also. And if you have a friend in Jesus that you have not recognized, that you have not accessed, and that you have not stepped into that relationship, it's time you did that, friend. And if that sounds like a spiritual cop-out that doesn't really make a real-world difference, I assure you, it is much more. I can introduce you to people, a number of whom are part of this church, and they will tell you with the deepest sincerity that their best friend is Jesus. And they have learned that he is receptive to that friendship, and it has come to mean everything to them. No one ever cared for you like Jesus. There's no other friend as kind as he, and no one else can take the sin and darkness from you. Oh, how much he cares for you and for me. We will never be friendless because of Jesus. Let's pray.